Hello, fellas. Daf Kof Chet Amud Beis. So the Bryce had said, "Umaspidin bohen hesped shel rabim." You see, it's three lines. It's the third wide line. You can't use, as the Bryce lists a whole variety of things that you can't use a shul for. So obviously, you can't use a shul as a beer hall. But there's all types of things that we would think are shimush shel mitzvah. B'cholzot, you can't use it. Because the shul is really dedicated for the specific purpose of tefillah. There's even a question about using the synagogue for Torah study. The Mishnah Berurah brings the position of the Arizal. The Arizal would not teach what we today call like Musar or Machshava or things like that in a shul. He would teach I don't know, a Gemara shir. I don't know about the Kabbalah. Right? As it was being formed. But the Arizal wouldn't give a Machshava shir in the shul. You know the Ari shul. Because a machshava shir was like too much. It was like a slippery slope. From there, you'll talk very fully. Could you imagine people sitting around in a shul learning, and they end up speaking divrei chulin?
No.
As loyal listeners of the shir will attest, if you review the record, there's about 50 hours of recording so far on Megillah.
And
no, but say this, when you're Paskin, you're allowed to eat.
No,
yeah.
But that's either they would drop. You do that very drop.
Right. But the Divrei Chulin is L'chode. So, Mafsidin Hespet Shel Rabim. So the only type of Hespet you're allowed to give in a shul is a Hespet Shel Rabim. And in principle, we don't use a synagogue for
He spun the leak. Oh,
goodness. For a hesped for the masses, meaning a well-attended large type event, like an above-average funeral. Hechidomni hesped the rabbim. What is a hesped shel rabbim? What does that mean? Mechave Rav Chisda kegon hesped the kaibo Rav Sheshes. So Rav Chisda said, like if Rav Sheshes is present, we don't mean present in the coffin, we mean present in attendance, so then everybody's going to come to hear Rav Sheshes, and that will be a major event. And as it's not even necessarily because the person who died was a Godel B'Yisrael, and you get like thousands of, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, but because the presence of Rav Chisda, or the presence of Rav Sheshes, Mechave Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes gave an example. Kegon hespeded the guy bay Rav Chisda. That's the Rav Chisda. They were flattering each other. They were meaning that if one of the Gedolei Yisrael is present, so then that presumably people would come. You know that when the Rav Soloveitchik would give a hesped. There's an interesting article about Rabbi Soloveitchik as a maspid. Some of Rabbi Soloveitchik's most significant statements of Jewish thought were formulated as eulogies for great people, because when he'd give a eulogy, he wouldn't talk about the dead person. Like, usually, what's a eulogy? You go to the eulogy, and they tell nice stories about this person. So the Rav would use it as an opportunity to explore something about the human condition.
He's always delivered like at a funeral?
No, they were very rarely delivered at the funeral. They were often like at a shloshim, let's say, or a yard site or something, so that he had the kind of ability to craft and form. A hesped is usually given on the... I always say that hespedim rarely make great oratory. Because by definition, you don't have the time to prepare, at least not properly. I mean, even if you kind of think about it a long time in the coming, but
It's a hobby with Ezra Weitzman, Rabbi's funeral. It's very, you know, like, famous for saying, like,
he got the parsha wrong.
Together, we, no, but he was talking about, like, it was, you know, you think you'd be able to write something fancy, but it was like, he ended up saying, like, he ate a few things, he ate a few things.
Yeah, but he also quoted the wrong parsha.
All right.
Well, I don't remember what it is, that he said this week's parsha, and then he said something, and it was the wrong parsha. As you recall, the best test bed at that funeral was Clinton. So, but it could be that Clinton's Hesped writer had more Jewish knowledge than Ezra Weitzman's or anybody else's. You know who came up with Shalom Chaver? According to rumor, it was Rabbi Haskell Lookstein. But that's the rumor. So. So Hesped is usually, you know, you usually have to grade on a curve, and usually the people that are Maspid have, you know, some close personal connection, so they're like in the middle of their own emotional trauma while they're trying to deliver this piece of oratory, so it's usually not a great piece of oratory. But if you speak at the Shloshim or you speak at the Yortzeit or something like that, so you might have a chance to. So many of the Rav's Hespedim, for his in-laws, for Rabbi Twersky's parents, for his uncle, his most famous Hesped, Madadech Medod, Hesped for his mother, his Hesped for Reb Chaim Heller, who was a very close senior chaver. No, the Nechoshen was for Reb Chaim Ozer. Chaim Heller, it was about the Pleitat Sofrehen. What does it mean, the Pleitat Sofrehen, the remnant of the scribe? Is that in each and every generations come and generations go, but they don't do so in a day. As we don't get up one day and say, starting today, the old generation is gone, the new generation. There's always some kind of transition. So the Pleitat Sofrehim, the remnant of the previous generation, are the people in a current generation who are representatives of a previous era. And he speaks about Chaim Heller as one of those people. Other such examples where he would do that thing where he would kind of distill the person down into a typology. Right? And it's kind of typology that doesn't really exist in the real world necessarily. Like halachic man, like lonely man, like religious man, this kind of like pure, as if you could put the human psyche into a centrifuge and come out with like a distilled, rarefied, you know, he talks about, forget who it was, he talks about Rosh Chodesh man. I forget whose Hesped this was. But he talks about the person maybe died on Rosh Chodesh. They said Rosh Chodesh represents a certain singular facet of the human personality, of the Jewish worldview. This person was a Rosh Chodesh man, and the like. So Hespedim rarely make for great oratory in the moment. So if Rav Chisda or Rav Sheshes are present, a lot of people are going to come. So when the Rav used to give a Hesped, so everybody used to come. It was one of these major events. Rafram, I don't know. But in other words, if he was, like they'd say, where should we have the funeral? They'd say, well, Rav Sheshes is going to be Maspid, so then we can have it in the shul. Right? That's where we're going to be. So, you want to stay and learn? So Raphram, you remember Raphram? Raphram Bar Papa, Surah Bar Papa, Kanina Bar Papa. So Raphram Asfada Lakalate Bevekinishta. When his daughter-in-law died, he was maspid her in the Beit Knesset. So Omar Mishum Yakara Didi Vidimita atu kula alma. So how could he be maspid her in the Beit Knesset? It is because of the honor for me, or for the dead, the deceased, so everybody will come. And therefore it justifies having it in the synagogue. Rabbi Zera Safteh Lahahu Merabonon Bevei Kenishta. Rabbi Zera gave a hesped for a certain chacham in the shul, for a certain Talmud chacham in the shul. Omar I Mishum Yikara Didi, O Mishum Yikara Didehu Demeita Atu Kulei Amo. So again, either they're coming to honor me because I'm being the mas, I'm being maspid, or they're coming to honor the deceased. So therefore, it justifies having it in the synagogue. In other words, what's the idea? In other words, what difference is? And as you say, well, we can have the Purim spiel in the shul. So sometimes you have a Purim spiel, nobody comes. Sometimes you have the Purim spiel hanging from the rafters. So if it's going to be packed, if it's going to be sold out, so then you can have the Purim spiel in the shul. No, Adarabba, it's a bigger bizayon to have it in the sanctuary. Right? So what difference, if you're not supposed to do it, what difference does it make whether 10 people are there or whether it's standing room only? No?
If you have what like a lot sort of it's going to give a husband. You don't want to just have it like, you know, this tiny little corner thing, and it's going to be 200 people, we're all going to be packed in, it's not going to be provided for a service. You want to do it in the proper shul.
I mean, Kavod HaTorah doesn't...
Well, you look at these great rabbis as if they're the English of the Torah.
No, but the point is, I think it's not the... It's not a matter of kavod, it's a matter of something having to do with the rabbi, right? That if it's like a communal wide event that warrants having it in the synagogue. The synagogue having been the largest public, you know, facility, you know, in town.
So the personal hesped you say no, but for the public hesped you say permissible.
Yeah, and it's not just the function of the person who's being mastered. If the rabbi of the community dies, so then it's also, and everybody's obviously going to come, so then it's also permissible to have it in the synagogue.
Is that like massive funerals they have now? Do they have that common in earlier times? Like
well, we'll
or Rashi or
we'll see time. That the Gemara has what may appear to us an exaggerated number of how many people would attend a large funeral, right? When you consider that, you know, probably the cities that we're talking about didn't have that a population of that size.
Right, but in more recent
I think they say the largest. The largest funeral in New York City history was, well, I think it was Moshe Feinstein, and until Moshe Feinstein, it was Yaakov Yosef, right? The only New York only once ever had a chief rabbi Yaakov Yosef, in the beginning of the 20th century, and then I think Moshe's eclipsed that. I don't know if that's...
But like in Europe, I don't know.
I can't imagine, you know, that before 1900, the Chafetz Chaim died in 1933. But in other words, what would it mean for... The Chafetz Chaim died, I think, in Raton? That's wherever he was. In other words...
It wasn't like today where you can get to this place.
Yeah, look, the Rav died. The Rav died Chalamoid Pesach. And his funeral was on Friday morning of Erev Shabbos Chol Hamoed Pesach. I heard about it on Thursday late in the afternoon. Remember, there's no internet. There was no. But I heard it, somebody called me on the phone. Said, "You heard the Rav died?" And a friend of mine and I drove up to Boston, like we left it. You know, like 5 in the morning or something. We drove to Boston for the funeral and came back home before Shabbos, back to New Jersey. That was not possible in the forget the pre-modern era, you know, 50 years earlier. So I don't know. It's a good question. Like, what is the most massive funeral? How many people attended Queen Victoria's funeral? I assume that with the wisdom that you're carrying around in your pocket, you can answer the question.
But
she laid in steroids, so that's also not fair, because you could say how many people passed by in those...
And like Lincoln died.
Yeah, so Lincoln was also different because Lincoln died, and then they took him by train, and they stopped at each station, and even it was just the 50th anniversary of the Bobby Kennedy assassination. So they took him by train from New York to Washington D.C. because he was killed in Los Angeles. They flew him to New York because he was senator of New York for 10 minutes, and then they took him by train from New York to Washington, where he's buried in Arlington. And along the way, they stopped, and there are these pictures of all the people standing out on the... Okay. But a Jewish... What was the biggest Jewish funeral? I don't know. Here we've had some. You had these funerals. Shlomo Zalman and Zavadia. I think they say that Rav Shlomo Zalman's was the biggest funeral. Rav Shlomo Zalman's funeral, I think, was the same year as the Rabin assassination.
When you were born?
It was Bekirat Makom. I remember, I think they said that Rav Shlomo Zalman had more than... Because Rabin, they like discouraged people. Because they said it's going to be crazy. You won't be able to get anywhere near it. So people figured it's better to watch it on TV. Because if you went, I went, but you couldn't see anything. You were just in a throng of people. You couldn't get anywhere near Herzl. You couldn't get anywhere near the Knesset. You couldn't. But you were just like walking around in a mob of people. So people stayed home to watch it on TV. Okay. Anyway, Reish Lakish saftei lahahu tsurba mirabonan de shchiach ba'arad Yisrael. Reish Lakish gave a hesped for a certain young Talmud Chacham that would frequent Eretz Yisrael. I mean, Reish Lakish is in Eretz Yisrael, and there was a certain young Talmud Chacham who would travel from presumably from Bavel, right? And he must have died in Eretz Yisrael. Tani Hilchata Bechaf Dalad Shurata. He would teach it, he would say his halacha, he would learn his halacha, meaning he would learn in the 24th row in the Beis Medrash. So you know that the Beis Medrash was by seniority. So if you were in the 24th row, what was your rank? Somewhat, he was a backbencher, as they say in your parliamentary systems. Right? Meaning, was he the Gadol Ador? No. But Reish Lakish gave him a good, right, proper hesped. Why? Where did Reish Lakish give his hesped?
Where?
Yeah. No, this is not. The Gemara has moved on. Having discussed this question of giving hespedim in the synagogue, it's now describing the propriety of hespedim in general. In other words, he didn't give this hesped in the synagogue. Right? But he gave a right proper hesped to a very junior member of the learned rank. In other words, you might have said, this is not according to his honor to be maspid such a junior scholar. He was Reish Lakish after all. So Omar, what did Reish Lakish say? Voy! Chosra arad Yisrael gavarava. The land of Israel is missing a great man. Meaning? He laid it on, right? In the manner that it's appropriate to slightly overemphasize the Shulchan Aruch, describing Hesped, says, you can't lie, but you don't have to tell the whole truth. Right?
There's another possibility, that he was a young man with exceptional potential.
Yes, maybe.
He didn't reach his potential.
Yes, because he died young. No, the point is that Reish Lakish went above and beyond to give a nice Hesped for this guy, and he wasn't even like a local. I mean, he was just visiting. Right, he was from Chutz Laaretz, and he happened to be visiting, and he came to learn in yeshiva, as they say, and he died over there in the 24th row, and he gave a proper hesped. Hahu dahave tane hilchata sifra v'sifrei v'tosefta v'shochiv. So a certain guy, he used to learn the halacha and the medrash halacha and the tosefta, and he dropped dead. Atu v'amr le Rabbi Nachman, the Rav Nachman. They came to Rav Nachman. Not of Breslov, right? Rav Nachman the Amora. Lispide, Mar, give him a hesped. So Omer, hechin ispidei. Well, I mean, what should I say? Like, what is there to say about this guy? What does it mean that he learned all these things?
Memorized.
Yeah, and he wasn't on the first read of the Gemara. He said, "Wow, he's a guy. He learned all the Sifra and the Sifra and the Tosefta." All the no. Meaning he was a guy. He like learned a little bit. So what should I say about him? Hi, tzana de mole sifre de choser. We're missing a basket full of books, right? In other words, he wasn't a very clever, innovative, or original lamdan, mechadesh. He was a guy who learned. He knew a little bit of what he learned. So Rav Nachman is like, what should I say? Like that, like in yeshivas, there are always guys that like they're guys who can't like read three lines of the Gemara, but they're very clever, right? I mean, I remember in Bravanders, there are always guys like this. You know, they come to learning very late. Their mastery of Hebrew and texts is not complete. But they were geniuses. They were brilliant. You know, because they'd come from all types of interesting backgrounds and in the sciences and in math and PhDs. And right? You know, they just hadn't learned Gemara before. So their minds were ahead of everyone else, but their ability to read the words, so they'd sit there, listen. You could listen to the shiur. And you know you were 10 steps ahead of everyone else, right? Not everybody's like that. So here's a guy, he could read and he knew what he read, but he didn't necessarily chap it. What should I say? He was, right? You remember when Kirk has to get Spock angry, because only if he gets angry the alien bug will get chased out of him. But the problem, he can't get Spock angry. He doesn't have emotions. So what does Kirk say? Your father was a computer and your mother was an encyclopedia. So what do I say? What am I going to say about this guy? He was.
What is it like Fahrenheit 454?
451.
451.
Right. Huh? Basket. I had sounded demolished for the chaser. I mean, it's like I had to speak last week about somebody, and I took this Gemara out of context. And I said, this is a guy who's really, a guy wrote a very interesting new book. There was a book launch that I had to moderate. A guy wrote an interesting new book. He himself, like, has incredible yedda about everything. And the book, it's a book about books. Right? So I said, you know, you could say about him and you could say about the book that he wrote that they are both Atzana de Mole Sifre. It's a book about books. It's a book that contains many books in it. Right, like you know, Kramer's coffee table book, which is a coffee table. Va'omri leila Rav Nachman, lispidei masa. Right, so that's not so very nice. So the Gemara says, Tachazi ma bein tekifei de arad Yisrael lechasidei de Bavel. Rav Nachman was from Bavel. Reish Lakish was from Eretz Yisrael. Reish Lakish was known as a very takif personality. Very harsh, very critical, right? I mean, it came from, he came by these traits, honestly, if you know his biography. Rav Nachman was known as a chosid, you know, in the pre-Baal Shem Tov sense of the chosid. Very righteous. But look at how they each respond in this case. Which of them seems more righteous, and which of them seems more harsh, right? It's the exact opposite. Rashi says, "Hai tzanat male sifre, that basket of books, eino ela kesal shemiluhu svarim, ve'ein mi bein ma betocho, ma? Ve'ein mevin ma b'nachot, ve'ein mevin ma betocho, af shone halachot, ve'lo shimesh talmid chacham, ללמוד שיבינוהו טעמי משנה ופעמים שדברי משנה סותרים זה את זה וצריך לתרצה כגון הכה במה יסקינן כגון המאני רבי פלוני כגון חסוי מחס וכו'. Here's a guy, he just read and he didn't know what he was, like he didn't understand what he was reading, he didn't understand what he was learning, and even though like learning, like just sitting and learning itself is a great value, right? But if you don't have any understanding, you know, it's not so much. And even more than that is Shimush Talmidei Chachamim. Right? Because in other words, if you're Mishamish Talmidei Chachamim, like learning can't be done in isolation. Like Jewish learning is something that always happens in dialogue. Right? In a Chabura, Bachavrusa, Rabbi LaTalmid, father to son. Right? And in the dialogue, in the interaction between student and teacher, between child and parent, that's where the real kind of learning comes. So this guy, he didn't have it. Tanan Hatam with the Eshtamesh Betaga Cholof. The Mishnah Avos says that if somebody makes use of the crown, they will speedily pass away. Meaning, if somebody makes use of the Torah for an ulterior motive, right? You study Torah so that
you have long life.
No, you study Torah so that you'll get honor, right? So you will not be long for the world.
What if you study Torah for the sake of Parnasa?
Hmm?
What if you're studying Torah for the sake of Parnasa?
Yeah, maybe that's one of the things you're not supposed to do.
If you look at the other way, if I look at Meshochet, so I'm studying...
That's something else. That's a malocha. Right? Well, the world needs shochtim, the world needs tailors, the world needs butchers, the world needs shoemakers. Right? Part of being a shochet is you have to learn the halachot of shechita. Right? I told you I was rereading that biography of Rabbi Levin. It says that he got smicha from Avi Zalman Meltzer. He got smicha from Avi Zalman Meltzer. And he was so embarrassed by the flowery, you know, melitzot in this Chtav Smicha that he ripped it up. Right? Because he thought that, in other words, the honor that was gained to him through, you know, imagine that he hang this on the wall, right? That Avi Zalman, the Godel Hador, said this about little Arya Levin. You know, he said, it would take away all of his schar, right? Because you know, it's all yotzei schar befsedo, because all of his schar b'hayom, right? That he should get this, he should get this honor. So he ripped it up into little pieces. Where did I go? Tani Rish Lakish. Ze hamishtamesh b'mi sheshoneh halachot. What does it mean that if you, in other words, he interprets the, Rish Lakish interprets the, and as we said, this is a kador lachvorbo. Right? And as you're misusing the Torah for some ulterior motive. He says, no. It's misusing a Talmid Chacham. Right? There's a Talmid Chacham. So you say to him, look, buddy, you wanna mow my lawn for me? Right? That would be a misuse, that would be a kind of form of ki'ilu me'ila of the Torah through the purpose of a Talmid Chacham. Kitra shel Torah. The Omar Ula, the Shtamesh Inish, Biman de Tane Arba, Velo the Shtamesh Biman de Matne Arba. It's better to make use of a person who has studied the four than to make use of somebody who has taught the four. What are the four? The Arba Sidre Mishnah. Ah, but there's Shisha Sidre Mishnah?
Yeah, we're finished.
So not in Bavel. In other words, they of course were aware that there were Shisha Sidre Mishnah. But there were only four that were in general circulation on the curriculum. Those four were, what would you guess? Moed, Nashim, Nezikin, which are the three most halachal amaisa.
I guess it says right.
No. Kodshim. Why?
Because they're in love, but they're always wanting to go back.
So when you go back, you got to know what to do.
Yeah, cool, yeah, so.
You have to know what to do when you go back.
Yeah, but that would be true about Zeroyim also. Yeah, it's true. Cool, and you have to know the shech, but brachos you need to know the daven, right? So it's not so much like you need to know because we're hoping we're going to get back real soon, because that would be true of Zeroyim also, as well as Taros, presumably. No, because Kodshim, you have they have this note. This later also fell out of practice, and it's what the history of the Gemara curricula, you know, over time is an interesting one. But apparently, at this point in Bavel, Kodshim was still learned because even though it wasn't halacha lemaisa, meaning the karbonos, it was halacha lemaisa in the sense that through the study of the karbonot was ki'ilu you. Maybe. As opposed to Zeroyim, where there's not. So that's why the Bavli has Gemara on the Masechet Torah in Kodshim, but not in Taros or in Zeroyim to the same degree. Anyway, so at this point in the history of learning, there were four Masechet Torah. The Bekitzer, as we said, somebody's learning Shas. Like today, we call it Shas, right? Shisha Sidre, right? And it's not even, and it's a mistake. I just edited somebody. Somebody translated something, and meaning an Agnon story. And in Agnon story, the person says that they were learning Shas, and the person consistently translated is, "I was learning the six orders of the Mishnah." That's a mistake. It's when a 19th century character sitting in yeshiva says they're learning Shas, what do they mean?
Gemara.
I'm learning Gemara.
20th right? Century too.
Even yeah, certainly, but.
That is funny.
Yeah. Right. So in other words, they learn Arba means they learn Torah Shabbat Peh. Meaning that
like
no, because they were referring to what we call the Mishnah. What they call the Mishnah. And this idea that means that the kind of misuse of a Talmud Chacham is more severe if it's a teacher than a mere student. Ki hadarish lokish. Have a ozil beurcha, mata urkama demaya. Reish Lakish is traveling along the way, and he comes upon some, I don't know whether it's a stream or it's a, Rashi says a shlulit shel mayim mechunasin. Rashi says it's a puddle. It must have been a very big puddle, because he couldn't easily walk around it. Ata hahu gavra, archeveya kaftei. So a certain guy comes along, he sees, here's Reish Lakish. This must be an elder Reish Lakish. Right? And this person comes and picks Reish Lakish up and gives him a piggyback ride. Or a ride on his shoulders. So that Reish Lakish wouldn't have to walk through the puddle. V'kama avrele, and he was passing him through the water. So omrele, karit, have you read the Chumash? Samarle Karina, yes, I read the Chumash. Reish Lakish says to the guy who's now up to his knees in the water. Tanit? Tanina? Harva Sidre Mishnah. Right? Says, have you learned Mishnah? He says, all four star.
This is an
Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, it's true, but it's an Agadah Bavlit. Right? Let's certainly presume that all the Agadot are true. But that doesn't mean that the way that we have them is an actual transcript written down by somebody who was an eyewitness.
They're
speaking Aramaic. Yes.
Well, they're speaking
Aramaic.
They spoke Aramaic in time of Mishnah,
let alone Aramaic. So, Amarle, Psalta Lecha Arba Ture? Did you carve out four mountains of learning? I mean, it's not enough. It's not just like, did you learn? Do you know the Mishnayos? But do you know like the Torah, the collective Torah Shabbat Peh up until this point on these Mishnayos?
Is this probably the source, one of the sources of the idea of arbiturim? Like this, the idea of later to come, but the idea of the arbiturim.
No, the arbiturim is from the Choshen.
No, I'm saying in the Choshen they had arbiturim.
That phrase is. Vitanta Bar Lokish? Akatfecha? As you know Mishnah, you know Chumash, you know Mishnah, and you know the Torah Shabbat Pe'ah on the Mishnah, and you're carrying Reish Lakish on your shoulders, right? Shadei Bar Lakish Shabemaya. You should throw it, as Reish Lakish says to him. You should toss Reish Lakish off your shoulders, toss him into the water, right? Meaning, I don't want to be here up on your shoulders because I, Reish Lakish, am abusing the Talmud and Chacham. So Omar Lay. I mean, you don't need Barry Levine stories, right? And this is true for right? All types of half of them might even be true. The stories that are told about Petr Rabbi Lichtenstein, right? Not so. Omer le nichali dashmeinan lamar yachi gamur mine. He says, all right, I'd like to listen to you. Throw me into the mud. So if you insist, well, so Omer le, hi hachi gamur mine ha milta. Well, let me teach you halacha. Let me teach you halacha. If I teach you halacha, so then
you can stay.
So then I'm your rebbe. Because if you learn even just one halacha from me, then I'm your rebbe, and then okay, then it's okay. So what do you tell? Let me tell them this. Halacha psuka. The ham nilsa d'amar Rabbi Zeira benot Yisrael hein hechmiru al atzman shafilu ro tipodam kechardal yoshvot alav shiva nikiim. He teaches them a simple halacha psuka that everybody seemed to have known, right? The simplest thing, right? And it's he could have said to him, if you forget yalav yovah shachris on Rosh Chodesh, you have to repeat davening. What? Right. why the one halacha psuka that he teaches him is this particular one?
Well, it's interesting. He said, I don't know if it's relevant, but it's interesting that he said that he studied the Arba, meaning some he didn't study Tara.
Yeah,
fair. So he comes from Tara that he didn't know.
Oh, that's a very good idea. That's a good pshat, David. That's a good pshat. But why this particular? You know what this halacha is? This is the halacha of why there's a half a month your wife sleeps in a different bed. Mikar adin, how long does a woman who's menstruant have to be separate from her husband, or how long does she have to wait before she goes to the mikvah?
7 days.
7 days. From when?
When she sees blood.
Right. She doesn't need to have what we call shivinikiyim. Right? In other words, the women wait until they stop bleeding until they start counting 7 days. And because of the machinations of how long that is, it's a minimum of 5 days. So there's a minimum of 12 days, 5 days of bleeding, even if she's not bleeding at all 5 days, before she can make a hefsek tara and count 7 days without blood. So there's a minimum of 12 days before she goes to mikvah. Right? That is the din of what? No. What's the din of
zavah.
Of a zavah? Right? Nowadays we don't have zavah or zav. Right? But the women were machmir on themselves to treat a regular case of
even just a drop of blood,
right, as if it's a zavah, which is so. That's the one halachiti. So David's explanation is a good one, but there's got to be another.
I said that without looking, but the Steinbach does quote that in the name of the Zichron Besefer. That same.
Excellent. Baruch Shekivanta. So who says that?
Zichron Besefer.
Did me the racing. There's a Rashi. This long Rashi just explains to you this halacha. He doesn't explain the. He doesn't touch the agada. So now, having taught him halacha, he can stay on his shoulders. Tana de Eliyahu kol hashone halachot muftach lo shu ben olam habo shnemar halichot olam lo al tikre halichot ela halachot. Right. This idea that if you learn a halacha, if you teach a halacha. Right? The ways of the world, the ways of, right? but it's not halachot, it's halichot. And of course, it's not such a, in the world of al tikre, it's not such a stretch, right? Because the words are actually related. You know how al tikre works? Remember the electric company, Letterman, right? There's the girl is tied to the train tracks, and you have to get for this
cultural reference to work, you need to be within a certain window of age and a certain cultural thing. I'm not sure everyone at the table is going to
know.
How do you not know who Letterman is?
Well, because you're in that
window. Electric company one.
He's a little
electric
younger.
The electric company.
There's a little older, and there's a little other side
electric
of the
company.
Other side of the pond.
When you were done with Sesame Street, you graduated to the electric company. And one of the things I know was Letterman, having nothing to do with David Letterman, but Letterman, there's a girl tied to the train tracks, and the train is coming. Letterman comes along and he rips the T off the train and turns it into
rain.
And then she complains that she got wet. Right? So some of the Altikres are like this. Right? But etymologically,
I'm not sure you're right. I think there's an approach. I think even Sheryl Lieber talked about this. I'm not sure that halakha doesn't actually come from lelechet. There was a concept of halakha it was a Middle Eastern concept of halakha from maybe a different idea that later came to be the thing that we have. It wasn't actually we're very familiar with it because we say this this Gemara all the time. And
we should gain say no knowledge, but I'm going to pretend you didn't say that.
Well, either way, they might have viewed it as such.
Yes. This question to go back to the question of having hespedim in a shul, there seems to be some question based upon something in one of the Tshuvas Rambam. When the Gemara talks about having a hesped in the shul, is it when you imagine a hesped, what do you imagine?
Well, standing up and
the question is
if the goofy there.
Yeah, is this the hesped? Is this what we call the levaya? Right, where you have the body right there, and everybody's on the way to the cemetery, or is this what we call an azkara after the fact? And if there would be some kind of nafkamina here between these cases. The Tzitzit Eliezer has a tshuva.
Wouldn't be a problem for Cohen if you started doing bringing the Nistor into the Beit Knesset?
Yeah, you would.
Cohen couldn't go in.
Well, certainly there are plenty of shuls where you have hespedim in the shul and the Kohanim have to absent themselves, just like any other place.
As a funeral last month. And they were running. They're running late. It was coming from Chutzar, so they wanted to get the funeral done before Shkia. So they ended up. It was a Beit Shemesh. They ended up running and just they buried. They did the burial right away.
Mm-hmm.
That, like,
and then they had
really
it,
quickly,
yeah.
And they went back into
yeah.
the
yeah.
into the lungs of the same. And I was sitting next to one of the clients. He's like, I've never been in here before. Like I never got to be in here.
Because there was no
mess.
When my father-in-law died, the funeral was very close. We waited for my sister-in-law to come from. America, so the funeral was very late in the afternoon, so that the hespedim were going to start before the shkia, but by the time the kvura, we got to the kvura, it was already going to be after shkia, and the chevra kedisha really pressured, no, do it like this, because they didn't want, in other words, they wanted the kvura to be done before shkia, so it's still on the same day.
That was supposed to be the same thing. Because he was their Pesach. So for them, it was an issue. They wanted not to make the Shiva go too long. But for you, that was an issue. There was an issue of having.
No, and that way you get an extra day of. In other words, let's say the funeral was on a Tuesday afternoon. So they said do the kvura, sit for 2 minutes before the shkia, and then get together in the ulam and have hespedim. So that Tuesday. Was the first day of Shiva, and Wednesday's already the second day of Shiva.
Your father-in-law was an issue because of their Pesach. They weren't going to have an issue.
No, it is, but Becholzot, you get an extra day of Shiva. And instead of having only 3 days of Shiva before Shiva's abbreviated by Pesach, You'd had 4 days of Shiva before Shiva was abbreviated by Pesach.
How does that help?
I mean, the same amount of time. Right. Is it like the idea of having
more days? Yeah, I mean, in other words, the Shiva is an extra hour. Shiva begins after you come back from the cemetery. Right? Or after you come back, and as if you would have come back to the Ulam Smachot, Ulam Hesbedin. Right? That's what they very strongly urged this, but I said there's, you know, no way. It's not going to do this. It's not going to. So, yeah.
So there are places where they bring in our own into shul?
There are places where they bring our own into shul. Not so... But it's certainly, even the Gemara admits that there are cases when it's mutter, when it's a godel, the presence of some great scholar or something, and then the Kohanim have to upset, or they have shuls in Boca Raton, Florida, they have funerals in the shul, and they have the rabbi's office. The rabbi Kenny Brander, who's now here running Or Torah, he's a Kohen. So when they built the shul, they built his office was built the way that in Kfar Etzion, the way they have that penalty booth for the Kohanim, which is technically a separate. It's not under the same ohel.
There's no overhang.
There's technically, you know, yeah. And there's the windows that open up, but it's technically the Kohanim. At Marvin's funeral, Rabbi Riskin stood in there and gave the hesped through the window. So there are shuls that have it. So anyway, so the Tzitz Eliezer has this tshuva, which ends. L'maaseh b'keshel achnasat mitat rav ha'ir o gadol hador uchadom el beit hakneset al menat lahagdil sham ha'mispeda lav. If the gadol hador, the Rav's funeral was in the shul in Maimonides.
In the school.
Yeah, the school. But it's a shul. It functions as that part of the building functions as
a shul. In the school.
There's a shul in the school, right? So that's where the hesped was. That's where the.
Imagine if I did it in a bigger hall.
In other words, I think that room it has like those accordion doors that open up back into the. You know, it was pretty crowded, but. That was actually an example of Aaron Soloveitchik was the only masbid. At the funeral, because first of all, it was Erev Shabbos, and people had come from afar, and they couldn't have a whole big thing. We didn't have time to stay for the Kfura. After the Spade, and we went back to New Jersey. But Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was the only maspid, and that was a fabulous hesped. Like I said, normally you have to grade hespedim on a curve, but in that occasion, he really, as a piece of oratory, it was. Matzinu minhagim shonim b'kach. So the Tzitz Eliezer says that we see there's different minhagim about having the funeral of a, you know, for the hesped shel rabim in a shul. Then he quotes a whole variety of tshuvas. Shemeid sheminhag ir izmir shelachol rav marbitz Torah b'holicho lebeit hakfarot machnisin oto b'arono letoch beit hakneset. In Izmir, which is in Turkey, anytime a rav who was a teacher died, on the way to the funeral, they would make a stop at the synagogue. Umanichim et arono al gabe safsal lifnei ahechal. Right, they bring the coffin in and they put it down on a bench next to the aron. And the assistant, the rabbi died, so the assistant rabbi gives the hesped. etc. Right, but this is not a minhag. Even though in Chutz La'aretz they used to do this, this is not a minhag in Eretz Yisrael to bring even the gedolim into the shul. Ke'et ra'inu she'ishtane b'minhag etzel achenu ha'sfaradim po yirakodesh Machnisim Aranosha Larav Rishon Letzion LeBeit HaKnesset. I don't know who he's talking about. I don't know what date this is. I don't know when this is from. But apparently there was one Sfardi Rishon Letzion. They did bring into a shul. Maybe this is Rav. Maybe Rav Uzi. I don't know. Chen Ayin Gam Besefer Bitzbor Yosef Shekotev De Bizmanenu Nohagim Bekame Mekomot Lahatir V'Nahara Nahara Ufashta. Etc. So he says he's not so thrilled with it, but he says that it's like it's a matter of minog.